guitar up.
One,
turn
two,
that guitar
three.
Up.
I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, the number one selling album, Deja Vu, from Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young.
Carry on, love is coming, love is coming to us all.
David lost his girlfriend, and all kinds of stuff happened. And we were all dealing with, myself particularly, dealing with the first mad rush of real big-time success. It made for some interesting perspectives, let's put it that way. Everything became very important.
Got to get ourselves back to the garden.
We just wrote songs, you know, about what mattered to us. But we had strong value systems. And what mattered to us was very essential stuff. We weren't writing June Moon Spoon, you know. We were writing about stuff that really mattered.
So just look at them and sigh. And know they love you.
Hi, this is Neil Young in the studio.
Hi. I'm David Crosby in the studio.
Hi, I'm Stephen Stills in the studio for Deja Vu.
One of the most hotly awaited second albums in history, Deja Vu lived up to its expectations and rose to number one on the charts. A rich musical banquet for the most serious and personal listeners, while mass audiences reveled in the glorious harmonies and the thundering electric guitars, end quote, says writer Bruce Etter in the All Music Guide online. Rolling Stone writers ranked Deja Vu at number 147 on their top 500 albums of all time. If the first Crosby, Stills, and Nash album was about harmony, both musical and personal, then it's fair to say that the second was about growing, and sometimes growing apart. In less than a year, the magic that David Crosby, Stephen Stills, and Graham Nash had found in their shared voices had been replaced by the strains of success. The excitement of discovering how good they sounded together had masked some real differences between them, differences in both temperament and musical taste. Even before the release of the album Deja Vu in March 1970, those differences had become magnified to a point where they were impossible to ignore. For the record-buying public, the most obvious change was that the trio had become a quartet, that the name of the band had been changed to Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. The addition of Neil Young, in part, was a result of Stephen Stills' desire to create music with more of a rock and roll edge. But there were other changes, more subtle, but no less important. Very little collaborative songwriting on the album Deja Vu. Very few times when all four members were actually working in the studio together. The sessions for the second album stretched out for weeks, punctuated by arguments and distractions, made worse by personal problems that affected everyone in the band. David Crosby remembers the mood in October 1969 when the recording sessions began for Deja Vu.
It was a pretty disorganized time in our lives. I think success had already, you know, had some adverse effects on us. We got so big so fast that in some cases there were thoughts, you know, of people looking to their solo career, wanting to be Elvis or something. Me, I wanted the group to go on. I wanted it, you know, more than anything. In some ways it did.
One morning I woke up and I knew you were gone. A new day, a new way, and new eyes were set along. Go your way, I'll go mine, kept on. The sky is clearing and the night is brighter. The sun, he come, the
Trio first met in 1967. They had no intentions of forming a new group. They were singers who became friends, musicians who came to realize that the music they created together surpassed anything they'd done before. As Stephen Stills recalls, the songs on their first album reflected their sense of newfound harmony.
Working up for the first album, we played in people's living rooms and stuff, and it was the ongoing David Graham and Stephen are coming over, and of course they're bringing their guitars, and of course we would bore everyone to death with it, sing our entire first album immediately upon walking in the door. These people were not reticent.
As successful as that first album was, the music presented a dilemma when the time came to perform it live. Except for drums, Stills had played practically every instrument on the first record, including bass, keyboards, and most of the guitars. Here's David Crosby.
After we made that record, then when we decided that we wanted to go out and play live, we thought, well, how are you going to do this? Because Stephen played lead guitar and keyboards, and he can't do that on stage, you know. And Neil was kicking around loose, you know, and he is one of the best songwriters in the world. This was when we were putting it together with Neil and becoming what we were going to be.
At first, Stephen still simply wanted to hire a bass player for the live shows. Then he tried to get Steve Winwood to play keyboards. It was Ahmet Ertegun, the president of Atlantic Records, who first suggested that Neil Young be brought into the group. At first, Stills wasn't sure he wanted to work with Young again. The two had been rivals and occasionally adversaries since their days together in the Buffalo Springfield. But Stills also knew that Neil Young inspired and challenged him in ways that no one else could. In the end, it was Stills who talked Crosby and Nash into accepting a new partner. Neil Young remembers it.
Well, they brought me into the group, and then they kind of needed somebody to make it more exciting live, I think. And then after they did that, they found out that they had me in the group, and that people expected me to be on the record. But they were pretty much into their Crosby, Stills, and Nash trip at that point. And so we just did a couple of my songs and added them on. And on my thing, Helpless, was a slow song. And I had to play it with them until about 4 o'clock in the morning and keep doing it over and over and over again to get everybody tired enough so that they would stop doing all of this extra stuff, you know, where everybody was playing too many Way Cool Junior riffs and stuff, you know. So I just, you know, we kept on going for a long time. Finally, we got one where they were half asleep and they didn't know they were doing it.
Dream, comfort, memory, despair. In my mind, I still need a place to go. All my changes were there. Blue, blue windows behind the stars. Yellow moon on the right. Big birds flying across the sky. Throwing shadows on our eyes. Leave us helpless, helpless, helpless.
Young joined the live Crosby, Stills, and Nash band in July 1969 in preparation for their first ever concert, August 16th in Chicago, followed 2 days later at a music festival outdoors near Woodstock, New York, you might have heard of. Here's David Crosby.
You know, when we said we were scared in the movie, it wasn't the audience. It was that everybody we cared about and respected and were, you know, thought of as our peers were standing around behind us in a circle saying, okay, new kids on the block, show us your stuff. And I'm talking about the, you know, legendary people, the band, Jimi Hendrix, the Dead, the Airplane, the Who, Sly and the Family Stone. We were surrounded by people that we were in awe of. And they were all kind of standing there. And it wasn't that they weren't friendly or anything, but they all wanted to, you know, see whether we could do that, you know, because they'd heard the record and they all wanted to know, well, can these kids really sing that good? It was an incredible experience, you know.
Their friend, singer-songwriter Joni Mitchell, was stuck in a New York City hotel, unable to get to the Woodstock Festival because the highways to the upstate area were eventually closed due to massive traffic congestion. Instead, Joni Mitchell watched televised news reports of the monumental 3-day Woodstock Festival, and she began to write a song that Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young would eventually record for the Deja Vu album. Here's Graham Nash with me in the studio.
You haven't gone outside the band too often for material.
No.
Over the years now of Crosby, no. Stills, and Nash. You haven't had to. You've got three of the best songwriters we've ever had.
Well, and we had a lot of songs between us. This was not a question of, oh, God, we don't have songs, let's find some. What we did was find things that specifically we liked and wanted to do.
You've stepped outside with notable success. Joni's Woodstock, for instance, comes to mind immediately.
Yes.
What do you look for in a song in general? I know it's a nebulous question, but what...
It's a nebulous question, but it's an interesting one. And the answer, I think, to that is that it must succeed on many levels. It must be interesting to listen to. It must have a melody that that will last longer than the next 5 minutes. It has to speak about something that will last a long time. And in all the cases that we're talking about, all those songs, including Woodstock, fill all those requirements.
At the time, Graham Nash and Joni Mitchell were living together, which inspired another song, Our House, which also appears on Deja Vu. Here are Neil Young and Stephen Stills.
I played on Woodstock, which you had a really great live vocal on it that Stills did that they erased to do a perfect live vocal, which sucked. And that was pretty well typifies the whole deal there. They do it, you know, like where they do it, anything that was really great and raw and live, with the exception of Almost Cut My Hair, which David left alone, thank God. He just let it be the way it was. But most of the things, they were so concerned with making them perfect that they were better before they started messing around with them.
Yeah, I worked it up. I was the one that worked it up, and everybody really liked that. And Neil swears up and down that I did a live vocal that was infinitely better than what I ended up on tape, and we didn't have the luxury of being able to save stuff and make B-tapes and stop, and I insisted on doing it so it's on Bias Beat someplace. He might have been right.
When we return, David, Stephen, Graham, and Neil discuss song topics that included past lives, paranoia, suicidal despair, and child rearing. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter. And for more musician interviews plus exclusive live performances, visit inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, Deja Vu.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm David Crosby.
Hi, this is Neil Young in the studio.
Hi, I'm Stephen Stills in the studio for Deja Vu.
I'm Redbeard, and David Crosby had written the title song during his final days with the Byrds in 1967. I asked Crosby to explain the French phrase.
Literal translation means seen before. What it has to do with is an experience that happens to a lot of people where you feel that you have been in this moment. You suddenly have a flash. I've been here before. I've been through this exact moment before. Nobody knows why people get this flash, but most people have it at one time or another in their lives. Personally, I would not be at all surprised if we were to find out that there are, you know, kinds of reincarnation. You know, almost everyone has this feeling at one time or another. And it's very strange, very strange.
If I had ever been it before, I would probably know just what to do.
Don't you?
If I had ever been it before, on another time around the wheel, I would probably know just how to deal.
And I feel like I've been here before.
Thank you.
Even Stills comments on recording the title song to Deja Vu.
Did David tell you how we had to put him to sleep to get that song cut? All the time that we'd been rehearsing it and listening to it and stuff, and make that transition to where the time was pretty good. And he got in the studio and he started thinking about it too much. And the transition from the slow part to the fast part was just, either the fast part was too fast and the slow part was too slow, basically. We got a great second half and we knew that we had it, so we just had to sit there and make him do it over and over and over again until he finally quit thinking and he was basically falling asleep. And then we just said, trust us. If you've got it, it's great. See ya. And then we, great, okay, we're taking that take and that take. We put them together and he never knew. So there are lots of secrets about that song that only today can we reveal to the public or to our partners.
The recording of the album Deja Vu was complicated by an assortment of personal problems. Graham Nash's relationship with singer Joni Mitchell was coming to an end, as was Stephen Stills' stormy off-and-on-again affair with another singer, Judy Collins. But the biggest blow was the death of David Crosby's girlfriend, Christine Hinton. She was killed in an auto accident just weeks before the recording was scheduled to begin. As David Crosby remembers, the music became a kind of escape.
That album wasn't done as a unified project. You know, we were all feeling very separate, and we only got together and really functioned as a unit on a couple of songs, like Almost Cut My Hair. Was actually all of us playing and singing at the same time. It was a very tough time for me because it was right after Christine got killed and I was not, you know, at my best as a functioning person. I would sometimes come into the studio and wind up just crying, being completely unable to deal with it all.
Almost cut my hair. It happened just the other day. It's getting kind of long. I could have said it wasn't my way. We'll be right back.
I finally get myself together, I'm going to get down in that sunny southern weather. And I find a place in silence, separate the wheat from the chaff. I feel
David Crosby's Almost Cut My Hair, one of the few live in the studio takes by the whole band. Here's Stephen Stills.
Neil and I have always had that once you pick them up, start, and it'll be done soon. And if you have to play it more than about six times, put them down and go on to something else. So basically, we did Almost Cut My Hair as much as we wanted to, and then turned to something else rather quickly, and turned out everybody liked Almost Cut My Hair. So, and it was basically David sang it real good, and the band almost had it together. And even at that, everybody's not going to play it perfect. If you go too far, you lose the passion.
David Crosby.
I've been criticized for it a lot.
Why?
A lot of people think it's my most juvenile piece of work, but I like it because it feels good. You know, it expressed a feeling of a time and of an awful lot of people. I like that about it. I also like it that it's a live cut. There's no overdubs on it. That's a live vocal with a live band playing live, all one take. Everybody was playing and everybody was into it at the time, you know, and there wasn't enough of that. I would have liked to have seen a lot more of that.
Stephen Stills remembers the period.
David lost his girlfriend and all kinds of stuff happened. And we were all dealing with, myself particularly, was dealing with the first mad rush of real big time success. It made for some interesting perspectives, let's put it that way. Everything became very important, and it started to bore me how important everything got. But so there was a little tension on that regard, and it only affected the music in that we really tried even harder, I guess, and sometimes too hard.
At the time, one of the most quietly intense, taut performances of Forlorn Despair was Stephen Stills' naked rendition of his song, 4 and 20.
4 and 20 was one take, one time through the song, and everybody liked it just the way it was. That song is really one of them things where you work something out. The thought having occurred to me, I thought I'd just get it out of my system, and sure enough, it's never reappeared. And I guess maybe that realization took place at that particular instant.
4 and 20 years ago, I come into this life, the son of a woman and a man. Lived in strife, he was tired of being poor, and he wasn't into selling door to door, and he worked like the devil to be more. Different kind of poverty now upsets my soul. Night after sleepless night, I walk the floor and I want to know, why am I so alone? Where is my woman? Can I bring her home? Have I driven her away? She gone. Morning comes the sunrise, and I'm driven to my bed. I see that it is empty, and there's devils in my head. I embrace the many-colored beast. I grow weary of the torment, can there be no peace? And I find myself just wishing that my life would simply cease.
One of the biggest hits on the Deja Vu album was a Graham Nash song conceived originally as an English folk song. But Stephen Stills heard something quite different.
You know, I walked in and I said, "Boy, what's wrong with you? Can't you speak country?" Yeah, I said, he said, "What do you mean?" And I said, "Look here, give me that guitar." And I said, "Well, that's a setup for this kind of a feel, you know, Buck Owens." And we just cut it. And I said, "No, let's get us a pedal steel player." And we were in San Francisco, and the only person that anybody knew that played pedal steel was Jerry Garcia. I mean, we were not in Nashville or L.A. where we could find, you know, Sneaky Pete or somebody that played all the time. And Jerry Garcia did an admirable job, I must say, because he'd just taken it up about 6 months before. He was brand new at it.
Are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh. Of tender years, can't know the fears that your elders grew by, and so please help them with your youth. They seek the truth before they can die. Teach your parents well, their children's hell will slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh.
With the late Jerry Garcia playing tasty pedal steel guitar, that's Teach Your Children, written and sung by Graham Nash.
When you look into the eyes of a 12-year-old and see them singing the words to Teach Your Children, for instance, or the Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, or, you know, Long Time Gone, When We Do That. When you see those kids singing the words to those songs, most of which were conceived before they were, you begin to realize that as a musician, if you can take yourself out of the formula, that the music has a certain longevity. We must be doing something kind of right, you know, because they're singing those words, you know, and therefore they must care about those words. You don't learn a song if you don't care about it.
Still to come, the shocking event that forced Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young back into the studio 6 weeks after Deja Vu was released. For more interviews and exclusive live performances, follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with David, Stephen, Graham, and Neil. Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, the number one album, Deja Vu.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm David Crosby.
Hi, this is Neil Young. In the Studio.
Hi, I'm Stephen Stills in the studio for Deja Vu.
And I'm Redbeard of their second album, which Rolling Stone magazine ranks at number 147 on their top 500 albums of all time. Just 6 weeks after the release of the Deja Vu album, four unarmed students were shot and killed by Ohio National Guard troops during an anti-war protest at Kent State University, May 4, 1970. David Crosby comments in the studio.
Do you remember the picture in Life magazine of the girl kneeling over the kid in the pool of blood on the concrete?
I'll never forget it. As long
with
as
that
I live.
Questioning look on her face, you know, of why? How could this be, you know? Well, that picture, Neil and I were at a friend's house and they brought home the magazine. And when we saw this and realized, you know, the power of it, Neil just sat there and wrote the song right in front of me. And I said, we got to put this on tape now. And I called up the other guys, and I think we were in Los Angeles recording that night. My memory of it is we recorded it that night. If it wasn't, it was the next night. But I think it was the same night. And we put Find the Cost of Freedom on the back of it, gave it to Ahmet Erdogan, who happened to be in Los Angeles at the time, and he took it straight to New York and understood, you know, our need to have it out immediately and rammed it through. And we had that thing out on the street, you know, within a week or two after the event. I felt great about that. I felt that we were performing a really useful function in society at that moment, that we were really part of this country's course. We were angry. We weren't sad. We were angry. And you can tell it from the song. We were really angry. This wasn't the America that we'd been brought up to believe in. And we wanted everybody to damn well know it.
The single only release, that's Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young's Ohio. Here's David Crosby.
I think some of the best music that Neil has ever done has been when he's worked with us, and we were able to do that, to supply that to his music. You know, supply polish, supply craftsmanship, you know, to it. I think that Neil, conversely, has supplied some of the best music that we have ever done with its heart and soul, with its fire. You know, I think if you look at Ohio, you can only think, this is powerful. Crosby, Stills, and Nash couldn't have made that record.
I'll light the fire. You place the flowers in the vase that you bought today. Staring at the fire for hours and hours while I listen to you play your love songs all night long.
Written and sung by Graham Nash, that's Our House, about his time living with Joni Mitchell, who reportedly still has that flower vase. Here are first Graham Nash, then David Crosby, then Stephen Stills with me in the studio.
We've been trained by the media and by television in particular to think in 17-minute sections in between commercials. And the media have trained us to only concentrate on the story of the day. That's one of the reasons why David and the rest of us like to do things like Farm Aid, for instance, or the Bridge Benefit, because they're ongoing every year. It's a problem that they're trying to face, but they're not just trying to do it this year and then move on to the next one of, you know, cause of the week. It's a commitment that goes on
long term.
Long term.
And of course, well, the problem's long term, so the solution's got to be.
Good point.
And of course, 20 years ago, nobody had figured out how to make any money out of the environment business. And so it was quickly forgotten. And now that they have a little bit to a certain extent, I think you'll notice it a lot more. And
it's
real funny about that.
It is strange. You're right.
But that's pretty American, too.
Yeah.
I have noticed that there are companies coming up now that'll take anything and recycle it and make it into something
you can
use.
I want stock in them companies.
There's a company now, man, I saw in the paper that's taking any kind of plastic you want and turning it into stuff that you can use for lumber, which is really a hot trick.
What is Crosby, Stills, and Nash doing
to kind of put your money where your mouth is?
Well, one of the things that we're doing is that we've realized, you know, for several years now, that the packaging of CD boxes is totally ludicrous. Within our own industry, we're trying to bring some awareness of waste and do something about it.
Over the years, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young have drifted in and out of each other's careers. Deja Vu wasn't just an album of music. It was a generational statement for post-war baby boomers. Again, David Crosby.
We didn't intend it to be that. We just wrote songs, you know, about what mattered to us. But we had strong value systems. And what mattered to us was very essential stuff. We weren't writing June Moon Spoon, you know. We were writing about stuff that really mattered. I think that is true, you know, to this day. And I like that about us, all four of us, as writers.
Find the cost of freedom buried in the ground. Mother Earth will swallow you. Lay your body down. Find the cost of freedom buried in the ground. Mother Earth will swallow you. Lay your body.
Find the Cost of Freedom from Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young was the B-side of the single Ohio. I'm Redbeard. I'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio thanking my guests, David, Stephen, Graham, and Neil. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard and Joe Rose for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2015, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter. And for more, visit inthestudio.net.